Gentlemen, welcome to the November 6, 2008 meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board. Please let the record show that all members of the board are present and accounted for. I'd like at this time to ask if there are any changes or corrections to the minutes of last month.
Jim?
Yes, Lynn?
On page 2, under the Liveaboard, the vote for the Liveaboard Subcommittee, it says Denise Jacobson, but actually we took the Jacobsons waiting to see which one would actually show up and be the member, and at this time it's Drew Jacobson, who is actually the member, and Denise is an alternate.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? Let's ask now then for a motion to approve the minutes as modified by the change in name for the Liveaboard Committee.
So moved.
Second.
It's moved and seconded to accept the minutes of the last meeting as changed. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. At this point in our agenda, we normally have oral communications, but I see no one waiting in the audience to speak to us, so we'll move right on to the presentation and action items. First of those items is the 2008 Summer Beach Lifeguard Report, and I don't know where that person is. Do you, Rick?
We've had an unavoidable delay, so I would suggest to you, if it's all right with the board, if we could just move on to another item. If Dimitri Jiraki shows up, our lifeguard supervisor, maybe we could squeeze him in, but for right now, we're not prepared to make that report.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to the next item. Item number 2 is a report by the Ad Hoc Committee on Measure D. And last month, we formed a ad hoc committee comprised of 3 members of the Harbor Advisory Board. Ed, Bill, and Michelle made up members of that. And I'll ask Ed here if he wouldn't, if he would be so kind as to give us a summary of your activities.
Well, we had a couple of meetings. Michelle and Rick Algert and I got together for lunch and discussed it, and then Bill and Michelle and Rick and I got together for breakfast and discussed what we'd found out. I talked to the commercial fishermen, and they are pretty much adamant about keeping the areas and any new lease sites for commercial fishing purposes, and we discussed maybe changing the wording to be more concise and to include a boat yard, boat storage, and marine research center. And they seemed to go along with that. That's kind of what we wanted. They didn't like the fact that it restricts some businesses down there, but they didn't necessarily want to change Measure D. They would allow the wording to be put in as far as they were concerned, that the businesses down there, if they wanted to expand, they could within their lease boundaries but not change their uses. And they were adamant about keeping the future lease, any future lease sites available for commercial fishing and primarily for those purposes. And Bill said that the people he talked to didn't really want to change Measure D. And Michelle, I guess, talked to some of the businesses down there and didn't get much of a feedback from them. I would suggest that we postpone fiddling with this thing. Reason being is we can get more public input in the future, and obviously they can't change this without a vote of the people, and they're not going to call a special election for Measure D changes. So you got 2 years before this thing's going to come up, and in 2 years we may have some changes, but I would suggest that we get more public input. We discussed that and thought we needed it rather than to mess with the wording for right now. And it's not like it's a pressing thing. So if the council wants us to go ahead and get feedback now, we could do that, but I would suggest that we recommend to them that we postpone this until possibly 6 months before the election. There's no use pulling our hairs out and working this thing over when it's doing fine now, and it can't be changed for 2 years anyway. So that's my report.
Thank you. Are there comments by members of the board? Gene?
So what happens at Verges and the Great American Fish Company? Those projects are working their way through.
That's too bad. They can't change Measure D without a vote of the people, and the point is that the next election is 2 years away.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out what is happening to those projects.
Well, so whatever happens to them, happens to them, but they're going to have to comply with Measure D, and they're going to have to if they want to do something in the next 2 years, they're going to have to talk to the city attorney and the city and try to work it out so that it complies.
Okay, I'm just curious.
You know, there's what other choices do we have? You can't really change Measure D until you get a vote. And you're not going to do a vote until the next election. So it's pretty simple. Rick, did you want?
I do, but I see Bill.
One question. Bill. So with the language as it reads right now, Ed, shall not be expanded or enlarged.
Yeah.
It can be remodeled.
Right.
But just can't be expanded or enlarged. So the square footage, as you stated earlier, would comply with the existing square footage according to this project that's up for review. It could be conforming under Measure D. Is that correct?
They could work it out if the square footage was the same, I suppose. I said that's not up to me, but it's up to the city planners and how they go about working their plans, unless they want to postpone them for 2 years and wait for an election. So it's pretty simple. Rick?
Mr. Chairman, could I provide some comments? So on the question of the two projects, it was actually one project proposal that combined the work at GAFCO, Harbor Hut, and Verges. The docks will all be reconstructed along all those sites, and then GAFCO would have a fish market built on the south side, and Verges would have a somewhat more extensive remodeling or however you'd like to term it. Now, my memory is that the Planning Commission and the City Council found those projects in compliance with Measure D as they were approved by the Council. So they will be going to the Coastal Commission. And, you know, there is a question, I suppose, how the Coastal will agree with the City's interpretation and the other aspects of the project. So that I think that's where that is. I'm going to try to provide you a little gentle nudging to shorten up your time frame a little bit. I think it's possible that the City Council would like to hear something from the board potentially in time to consider this for putting on the ballot in the next year. You don't know. So I'm going to suggest to you that the committee should try to get some kind of report to the board in, say, February 2009, which would be 3 more months to get some more info. We have another meeting in December. We can keep getting the word out that folks are taking input on Measure D, see if you get some more feedback from stakeholders and occasionally meeting and see if we can develop something that perhaps can be put to the board. And if the board would like to forward it to council, I do want to say again for the public, just as Mr. Ewing did, the Ad Hoc Committee on Measure D will provide the board an oral report tonight. And they propose, I would suggest to them that they make a written recommendation. What I'm suggesting now, which is, would be that you make a written recommendation to the Harbor Advisory Board, perhaps in February 2009. And the City Council would have to propose, if the City Council would take any recommendation the board would make, it would then have to propose a ballot amendment, and no changes could be made to Measure D until such a ballot amendment would pass. I don't know that you want to assume that it would, you know, that it would be waiting till the next election. But give me some feedback on that if you'd like.
Let me ask you a question. When else could they do it? I mean, if unless they have a special election in the state, wouldn't the next election be 2 years from now?
That would be I think the next regular election would be 2 years from November. I don't believe there's a regular election this November. or June, and I don't know exactly what the cost of a special election for this kind of thing is, so I
they wouldn't do it.
Well, I don't know.
Gene?
Wouldn't it be up to us and then to the council whether they want to have an election, a vote of the people? We can make a recommendation that we think that it should be a recommendation of a vote of the people.
They could call a special election. I don't know that they would.
No, that's not what I meant. I mean, can the council just change Measure D by themselves?
No, absolutely not.
No. Okay, because I would think it needs to be a vote of the people.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Any changes has to be the vote of the
people. Len, do you have anything you want to say about this?
Only that...
Microphone.
6 months before the election, to make a recommendation to the city council 6 months before the election may not be sufficient time to get something
maybe
on the ballot.
Months.
That you might need a year for us to make our recommendation, to get it to the city council, for the council to consider it, work up the ballot measure in order to get it on the next ballot. So considering how the wheels of bureaucracies turn, a year might be a more prudent time to election, to get the recommendation in.
Well, I think that myself, Ed, and Michelle can meet a couple more times, gather some input, and come back with some type of changes that we see fit to this document, Measure D, and bring it back to the board by February 2009. I think that's reasonable. We can get together and within the next 3 months meet.
We have a meeting in January. Maybe we could have another public.
I definitely think we need to.
Input on it in January. Maybe somebody will show up.
Mr. Chairman, typically we cancel our January meeting because it usually falls close to the January 1st holiday. But
that's true.
Not.
It's up to the board.
You don't have one in December either, do you?
No, you typically have a meeting in December, but then your January first Thursday in January usually falls pretty close to.
Well, actually,
I don't know where it is.
It's actually January 9th this year, I think would be the. January 5th is Monday, so 4th, 3rd, actually the 1st would be the first Thursday.
After. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good time, man.
Michelle, do you have any comments on the Measure D committee?
Just that it's hard to get public input, and the people that you would think would care about it really don't seem to care, and I don't know where to turn next. Maybe if some people would come to the meeting, any meeting, and tell us what they think, that would be great. Or, I don't know, email somebody. I got one person that really seemed to care about the whole issue, and that was the person who runs Verges.
Mm-hmm. So I like the idea. I think you've got Mr. LaFayette made a good suggestion. Why don't we target the February meeting to hold another public hearing on it, and you keep trying to percolate interest and see if you can get some more, some more feedback, hopefully in writing for folks out there.
I also would agree, to the postponement of this. One of the things I think would be helpful, at least to me and maybe to others too, would be to know who out there would make it on a list of potential stockholders, or stakeholders, I mean, not stockholders. it's stock market on my head, I guess. Stakeholders and or a list of those who've been contacted and asked if they have a vested interest in this. I know we've heard reference to the commercial fishermen and to some businesses, but that in itself isn't very specific. Who else out there besides those people that have a vested interest in the area covered by Measure D might have an interest in some input or providing some input into this issue?
I think we should have more public.
Yeah.
And time for a public meeting again.
People do care about it. I probably shouldn't have said that, but I only found one person who wanted to change it.
Do you, those of you that have worked on this, do you have some, like a list of who the stakeholders are? Commercial Fishermen's Association and
Well, I mean, actually, I think all the citizens of Morro Bay are really the stakeholders. I mean, but, you know, again, I think that maybe we need to, when I say we, maybe Michelle, who's done a good job, and Ed and myself, I could actually go to the Chamber of Commerce and talk to the director of the Chamber of Commerce, find out their opinion, their comments on it. I mean, the types of people that really have somewhat of a, hopefully a pulse of that, and actually get written comments and ask them for written comments so that we can use those written comments as part of our report to the City Council. And I think that's something that I'll take it upon myself to do that with the Chamber, and maybe you with the Fishermen's Organization and some of the other businesses, and ask for a written comment at least. I think that would be very helpful.
We had one comment in the letter, form of a letter from the Women's Fisheries
Group. That's correct. That was sent to us.
And that's pretty much the same opinion of most fishermen, I believe, also.
It would be of value then to, if we are going to have, or if your committee is going to have another public meeting, it seems it would be of value to maybe discuss, in addition to what you just mentioned, Bill, ways to publicize that in advance of a public meeting, just to encourage more stakeholders to show up.
Well, we could put an ad in the newspaper.
And, you know, maybe you can help us too, Rick and Polly, by putting an ad, or, you know, like what we did for the liveaboards. I mean, that we had a lot of response and written response. And maybe we can ask them to, maybe they don't want to come here for a public comment, but maybe they will take a couple minutes to either email or write a letter to you folks. And at least we can gather some documentation as opposed to, well, we talked to this person, we talked to this person, this is what we think. You know, then we have some actual documentation, and this could be put in a file so that when the City Council says this is what we're going to do, this is what people have stated, we have documentation that that did happen.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to keep trying on February 09. Do you think that we could announce right now that we're going to hold a public hearing in February 09 at the Harbor Advisory Board, ask for written comments? We can include it in our billing, or potentially if there's a newsletter, but certainly our billing, that does seem to notice in there. And I'd be happy to help if you want to go meet with the chamber or go to the business forum or something. You know, we'll try and let's solicit written comments. Yeah, and I think you want your mic on, but let's encourage people to solicit written comments to the harbor. They can be submitted to the harbor department or provide us emails, and you know, hopefully within the next 60 days, we might get some more additional comments.
Ed, does that sound okay to you?
Sounds perfect.
Okay, that sounds good. We'll expect them to hold another public hearing on or public meeting on the issue of Measure D in February of 2009.
And those individual members or members of the committee or even board members, if you do receive written comments, make sure you get us a copy, and we'll be happy to, if you'd like, be the holder of all the written comments we receive, and we can put them all in the packet in February if you want.
Okay. Any other issues related to Measure D? Okay, I expect we can move right on. The next item on the agenda is the proposed progress report on the boatyard and dry storage. Plan C.
I did.
I'm sorry. Let's back up. Item 3, commercial fishing qualifications for the 2008 calendar year is what's next on the agenda. Rick, would you mind
a
little introduction to this topic, please?
Yes. Yeah, thank you. And if you pardon me, I'm going to read just a little bit. So for background on this is the basic concept is the city has 48 slips, and We assign those, we give priority assignment of those to commercial fishermen. They are required to qualify, and I've included some of the language to try and give you some background on how we do that. Those of you who have been around before, we've been around and around on this issue a couple different times over the years. But so basically the code section in the Morro Bay Municipal Code that I cite here to start is 1532.01.0. It's the policy of the city to rent or lease all city facilities at docks, wharves, or piers to those vessels of a commercial nature, i.e. commercial fishing boats. Rules and regulations governing the use of city-owned docks, wharves, and piers shall be established by resolution of the city council. Next code section I included here is a definition of what vessels of a commercial nature were in the 1980s. Vessels of a commercial nature means vessels for which the State of California Department of Fish and Game has issued a current commercial fishing license and whose owner or operator holds a current commercial fishing license and which, within the current calendar year, has been actively used for commercial fishing activities. Such use shall be evidenced by proof that the vessel has grossed a minimum of $1,000 for each net ton capacity of the vessel, with a minimum of $5,000, or that vessel has fished at least 90 days in each calendar year, Gross earnings of fish sales or fish sales shall be evidenced by State of California Department of Fish and Game commercial fish receipts or by the official commercial fish receipts of other West Coast states. Proof of 90 days fishing shall be established as provided for in written, provided for in Resolution 9085, or as may be amended by the City Council, except that use of float plans for qualification purposes eliminated. We included here a copy, I think, yes, of Resolution 2391, which was the last time that we worked on the qualifications language. At that time, I think that was the time that we changed it from one exemption for qualifying to allow two exemptions from qualifying. And that's right. Let me just review this real quickly and make sure I got this right. Yeah. So that right now, the regulations are that you have to qualify, which each vessel would have to do every year to keep their slip assignment. Commercial fishing vessel would have to do to keep their slip assignment. You have to have $1,000 per net ton. So if it's a larger boat, it might have a 20 net ton capacity as listed in the documentation from the Coast Guard. In which case, if they're 20 net ton, then they'd have to provide us $20,000 in landing for that year. Now, there's a minimum qualification of $5,000. Many of the small boats or vessels that are not documented actually are, you know, the $5,000 is the minimum that they need to prove to keep qualified and continue on. There are a couple of wrinkles in it. So one is that we do allow two exemptions every 10 years for illness or bad season or major repairs or whatever. So you just get two out of 10 years, or you can just file a request for an exemption and we'll grant it. There are a couple of other ways to try and get to qualifying, and that's the mention of the 90 fishing, proving your fish 90 calendar days and in the year, or filing a float plan. Those are rare that those happen. And I would maybe remind you, since it's been a while we've dealt with this, that there is a into this resolution that the council approved. They actually built in an appeal process at the Harbor Advisory Board. And I think we did do one of those in the late 90s, maybe, when we had a couple of... So occasionally we have had heard appeals where I have not been able to grant a qualification and someone would like to appeal it to the board, or in the case of where we've just said that you no longer qualify, the appeals have come up to the board. And that action is built into the resolution for you, or at least that review process. So the problem this year is that for the last 2 years there's been a disaster in the salmon fishery, which is a primary fishery for many of our fishermen. What has happened is that there's been federal disaster assistance for folks who had a record of salmon landings in the window period. Gosh, I think the window period was something like 2000 to 2006 or 2000 to 2004, something like that. It was an approximate 4-year period. Does anybody know a little better than me, Michelle or Ed? So anyway, there was a window period. You had to have landings in those periods. not all folks that had fished salmon previously, unfortunately, did have landings in those periods for whatever reasons. I talked to one person who had happened to have been a crew during that period, so they didn't get disaster assistance. So it doesn't work out in all cases, but at least in many cases, those folks who verified their landings did receive financial assistance from the federal government through the state. And so one of our, we heard last year that there was potentially going to be a problem for folks qualifying in the because of the salmon disaster. In the end, it never came up as a big issue. So we just went ahead and qualified everybody and never brought it to your attention. Now this year, we've had a couple of people mention to us that they would, perhaps we should deal with it. The salmon disaster may be continued again next year. It depends on the return counts that they get and a number of other factors. And one recommendation I have to you, you've got a number of options. This is a great place for us to be able to talk about this and potentially suggest changes to the council, or we can stick with status quo and see if we have a problem. See how many people request amendments as we start the process, or or exceptions from qualifying. The only note, the reason I bring it to you now is because it's a fair amount of paperwork once we start it. And if there's a sentiment on your part to just say, well, let's just give a blanket, let's recommend the city council give a blanket exclusion from qualifying this year, or let's recommend that, as I suggest, perhaps we could include verification of receding of salmon disaster money as the qualifying amount. That seems like a fair way to me, and there was some discussion, I believe, amongst members of the Commercial Fishermen's Organization and some folks.
Burris, is that correct?
That's correct. Right now we have a waiting list of 11. I do want to, for the public, a number of those vessels have been on for quite a long time and have either declined or possibly can no longer qualify. When you get on the waiting list, you have to qualify, and then when we offer you the slip, you also have to prove that you qualify in the current year to accept the slip. So, and a number of them just got on it prospectively. I think I know one person who's a very active fisherman up in Moss Landing, and he got on our slip waiting list, and whenever one comes up, we offer it to him, and he says, no, I don't want to move yet. So that's typical. But we think there's about 3 people on there that would accept slips and could qualify out of the 11 now.
I got a question, Rick.
Ed?
All these slip holders at the present qualify for a waiver, right? For at least one waiver or something like that. How's that work?
I didn't review that. In other words, I think what you're asking is, is there anybody that's used their 2 and 10 and would lose their slip this year because they couldn't get in a waiver?
Right.
I didn't review that. I probably should have.
The reason I asked that is that rather than, if we left it the same, and the guys couldn't qualify because they didn't fish salmon last year, they could exercise their waiver. And then next year, if they don't get to fish salmon this year and it's still a problem, then we could change it to however we needed to. What do you think about that? You didn't listen.
You were suggesting that if we make no changes.
If we make no changes, the guys that didn't qualify last year because they didn't fish salmon can get a waiver. Now, next year, if they can't qualify for this year because there's not a salmon season, then we could change, maybe tweak it a little bit. But I don't see any reason to change it. If each guy can get a waiver anyway, why change it?
The waiver is different than the two automatic exemptions.
No. Yeah,
exemption of the
same. That's my fault. Illness or your boat broke down or bad fishing or something, and then you can keep your slip as long as you don't exceed those 2 in every 10 years.
I would like to ask something further then. A commercial fisherman that has a city slip can qualify based upon the amount of money he earns or the tonnage of fish that he brings in, or she. Do they count all the participation in all the fisheries, or is it?
As long as it's proof of a valid, one of the Western states fish tickets, any fishery includes. Kelp is a fish product, a seafood or a fish product at least, where they fill out a California landing ticket, and so we've actually qualified the kelp cutter based on those landings.
Okay, so the idea of, or the suggestion, potential suggestion anyway, of counting salmon disaster payments would benefit mostly those commercial fishing boats that have only a salmon permit and only fish salmon, as opposed to other boats that are more diversified.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so out of the 46 boats, do you have any idea how many of those are salmon only, therefore can't go out and fish, participate in other fisheries to make up the difference?
I can think of three or four off the top of my head that's, they probably don't have another primary fishery, at least. That would be their main fishery. And if they're doing other activity, I'm not too sure, but that's their main source of income.
I think one of the things that I'd be interested in, again, as you said, how many of the 46 slip holders, how many of those have used their two exemptions with the last 10 years? And if it's a lot, then we might have an issue. If it's not, I concur what Ed said, maybe we don't have a problem this year. But I'd like to know that. Do you know that? I know you don't right now, but...
Yeah, I don't, but we can find it out.
Yeah.
We could just carry this item over to December. That probably, I don't think we'll start significantly into the qualification process by then. So.
But that would be, I think, a very pertinent information to have before we make a decision, I would think.
Gene?
If we qualify the boats that have the Salmon Disaster Fund as qualifying, how many...
Even guess.
Were there any waivers applied for last year or the last few years?
Yeah, there was...
Was one or two, wasn't there?
Two or three, I think, come to mind at least. I didn't go back and look at those. Why don't we go ahead and make a suggestion to you that we carry this item over into December, and I'll provide you some additional information. And, I always think it's good. Hopefully anybody out there watching, and if they can provide us information if they're a slip holder or they, and whether how you know how what their situation is. Perhaps we'll get some input from the slip holders too, some additional input.
I think I would like to see that too, if for no other reason than to understand better what the scope of the problem is. Because if we're talking about maybe three boats out of the 46 that are actively fishing. And we're just deciding in the case of those three, for instance, whether to count their disaster money as qualifying or not, I think that's a much smaller issue to deal with than to consider it, offering a blanket waiver, for instance, for all of the commercial boats, whether they have other qualifying monies or not. So I would be in favor of that.
Boats that would be participating in salmon normally, as well as other fisheries, but still be unable to qualify based on this.
You could be.
There are other fisheries because they lack that or some catch in the salmon fisheries. Do I make myself clear? If they participate in three fisheries, so you would expect one third for each one, and so they couldn't qualify because they're lacking that one third of the salmon fisheries.
Yeah, could
because of the closing of the other fisheries has probably hit them also.
Yeah, last year it didn't seem to be a big hiccup in the process, since folks were able to find other activities or other fisheries to pursue and qualify. But it could be in that situation this year. We'll try and get some more information on how many folks. It may become more clear to everybody if we can give you an idea how many folks have already had two exceptions in 10 years, and that'll probably narrow us into a fairly small group, and we can figure that out maybe by looking at that.
But if they have to use their waiver because of the lack of salmon, then...
Yes. In the past, the waivers that the fishermen have been taking have usually been because of inactivities that they've chose not to do. They've either had an engine breakdown or they just chose not to go fishing or a health reason or something like that. Not a problem that they didn't cause. If they're shut down from fishing from a state regulation, they have no control over that.
Right.
Yeah. So that's just kind of a little background. So.
Okay, any other comments? I suppose we don't need any formal motion of any kind to postpone any further decisions regarding the commercial fishing qualifications for 2008. So we just postpone it and put it on the agenda for next month.
Re-agendize it for December. I'll bring you back some additional information.
Okay. We will move on then to the Boatyard Dry Storage Project Progress Report. We have a member of the audience. Are you here to speak on that issue? Would you like to come forward? And
would you like me to give you a little?
Maybe so. Sorry, Dana.
Yeah, because it might help background. Dana too. And so this, for the public out there, this is a storage facility in the North Embarcadero. Eventually, a conceptual plan was put together and sent up to the City Council that was approved as designated areas for future development of these facilities and some rec and parks type facilities in the North Embarcadero and some open space, sort of roughly designating where we should continue to plan to put these projects. In the case of the dry boat storage and the boat repair yard, it remained roughly where it was prior to starting the whole process. And that is on the east side of the dirt extension of Embarcadero toward the creek would be the dry storage yard. And then to the south, toward the entrance of the power plant and for the boat repair yard. And then the boat haul-out pier would have to be just north of the intake structure for the Morro Bay power plant, because we do need to have the land-water interface for the travel lift to pick up the boats and then travel across Embarcadero. As you remember, the reason we started that whole discussion, because there is some significant problems in that most, if not all, of that property potentially has the Coastal Commission telling us that it's environmentally sensitive habitat. It could be that could make it undevelopable. Harbor Walk Project, who also prepared our concept plan for the North Embarcadero improvements, and asked them to go ahead and do some additional conceptual design work for the site, see how they might actually lay out in a little more detail, and then take those and have at least one meeting, probably two, with Coastal Commission to see if some kind of agreement could be come up with potentially on developing these facilities, and other areas could be, there might be things that the city could do to permanently agree that there would be environmentally sensitive habitat in certain areas and maybe restoration projects, so that that we've hired RM to do that work. That's what I'm here to report to you tonight. And I think that the deadline that we've asked them to take that work, let's see if we put it in here. I think we're looking at April of next year to try and get that phase done. Now, just to give anybody some more information, there's another element to this I put in here that may be something you want to talk about, may not make you real happy, but I think it's important to, from my perspective, to understand that the dry boat storage yard is a fairly cheap facility to build. We own the land. It's usually just paving with fairly minimal drainage. Find a lessee, and the fees that could be had out of the dry boat storage probably would be a right side up type operation pretty quickly, if not right from the start. On the boat repair yard, I don't think it's the same situation. We have a fairly small market. We have a real need for this facility, but we don't have a whole lot of boats that are going to be in there in general, is my position at least. And we probably can't build a real big yard anyway, so we're probably looking at some yard that might hold 8, 10, 12 boats at any one time. And that isn't going to generate a lot of revenue. Especially in terms of the major infrastructure costs that are going to be needed to build this facility. The construction of a pier is going to be very expensive. The travel lift equipment itself is going to be very expensive. there will be much more significant drainage requirement and capturing of the water and the runoff because of the potential pollutants in it. There'll have to be some kind of, there'll be major environmental protections that will have to be built into this yard facility because of the nature of the work that needs to be done there. We estimate that it's at least $3 million to develop that facility. So that is going to take a little bit more, that's going to be a little more of a challenge to find a way, a financing plan to construct that facility.
I happen to have that in my possession. Might help visualize it. I'm going to ask Dana to make a presentation before I bring it back to the board. We have somebody here, a member of the public, wants to speak to this issue. So, I believe that's upside down. There you go. In the top right-hand corner is the area that's designated the storage yard, and that's one of the issues. The other part is down to the bottom of the page where the haul-out is. Going to come forward and state your name for the record, please.
Good evening. My name is Dana McClish, and I wanted to speak about this, the dry storage in the boatyard. First of all, I think both of these would be wonderful to have here. This is, you know, we are a bay community with the ocean right there. We have a lot of recreational boaters besides facilities that are just not here for boaters. I picked up this report from the Harbor Department, and I agree that, you know, the dry storage is definitely could be part one and is a possible moneymaker actually for the city. I think there's some of the positive parts about this for the boaters also is you're going to have a boater, especially smaller sailboats that are out on moorings, much rather be in dry storage where it's less expensive than having a mooring, plus all the maintenance that they have to do being on a mooring. And you know, it's you can't find an empty mooring, so that would help ease some of that. And the other thing is, it would just make it easier for people to go out sailing if their boat's just sitting right there, the mast is up, and they can just drag it across and put it in the water. That's the thing that I see in the dry storage plan that needs to happen, though, is there needs to be a hoist there. If you go to Santa Barbara Harbor, if you go to Santa Cruz Harbor, and if you go up and down the coast, you'll see municipal hoists with a dock, and they just drag their boat right. Like it says here, you know, this is something that, you know, some creative financing and maybe a big fat grant or something. But I just look forward to seeing more progress on this, on both of these items. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dana. All right, let's bring this back to the board here. Comments, questions?
I've got some comments.
Ed?
I talked with the Nature Conservancy, and they were, and I, you know, I bumped into some of the people from the National Estuary, and I was talking about this boatyard project and how we needed it because we had some sinkers in the bay, and it would be to their advantage to support this. And as far as the Coastal Commission concerns, we ought to have somebody, maybe a statement from the National Estuary people that would support this project in the place that it's at. And as far as financing is concerned, I didn't expect DBW to finance it anyway. Maybe a little help from them. But I thought possibly we could get some money. And with this, you know, you can stress the several larger boats that have sunk in the bay and a few of them that are ready to sink in the bay and the pollution that causes and the problems that arise from not having a yard here. And since this is a harbor of safe refuge, you're probably going to get some other junk piles coming in the bay. get tied up and broke down and never leave. That happens too. So financing may be available. We don't know yet. But we need to get this thing through the Coastal Commission. And I don't know when they're going to discuss it up there. If they discuss it in April, we ought to have see if we can't get some help from some of the environmental groups that are interested in protecting the bay from pollution. And I know the National Estuary people should be behind this, really. And you would think some of the other environmental groups would also to give us a hand with the Coastal Commission anyway. So those are just my comments.
Lynn?
A couple of months ago, I spoke with Dan Berman of National Estuary Program, and he is very much in favor of this and is willing to participate in any way he can with ECOSLO. No. One of the other environmental groups downtown who said that she would follow Dan Berman's lead. If Dan Berman thought it was okay, then she would be in favor of it too, no matter where they put it, even if it were on Esha land. I spoke with Noah Smuckler, who at that time was with Surf Riders, and his concern was not so much the environmental but the financial aspect. I spoke with Mr. Watson of Coastal Commission, who is our local representative, and his attitude was that he didn't even want to talk about using the Esha land. He said he didn't see any reason why we had to put it there, that we could just as easily put it on the south side of the plant, and telling him that we didn't really have any rights to that land, that the energy company, therefore they might sign that over to us, to him didn't really make any difference.
Okay. Bill?
You know, just from commenting and talking to people, I mean, even like you, Lynn, when you had to haul out your boat to get it repaired, you went to Avila Beach. Ed, you told me you went to Ventura. You know, we have over 500 boats, I believe, in Morro Bay. You know, you say it's not feasible, but if we don't do something, I think we're going to lose more and more of these boaters, because they'll have nowhere to do anything. I mean, I think we only have one little haul-out facility. Is that correct? And I think we have to do this if we're going to continue to be a boating bay. I mean, now, if we don't want that to happen, then so be it. But, you know, there is no other facilities here in Morro Bay.
Gene?
Yes, I have a couple questions. Rick, would we pave all of the Embarcadero extension out to the dry boat yard?
The general concept is up there on the overhead, and there's an area sort of in the middle that was maybe expansion, but probably you're going to have to designate some of that as areas that we won't build and maybe have to restore. That's my sense is from talking to RM and Coastal, at a minimum, those are the kind of things we're going to have to give up some of that.
My question would be pave the road out to the...
Pardon me, I didn't understand your question. I think to build the dry storage area, you're going to have to pave the road.
More than just the dry storage area, but the whole road itself.
Well, you're going to have to build an access road to it. So, you know, I don't know whether it would have to be the full road width or anything you might be able to just get with. But, yes, we're going to have to build a dedicated access way that would have to be paved to the facility.
Okay, just my question. And then the dry storage boats, they would launch next to the power plant. Is that correct? Or down to the existing boat launch now?
Right. There's a little bit of a glitch in the phasing of the things, because the dry boat storage would be really nice to have with some kind of hoist, but we had planned to put the hoist on the travel lift pier, which is sort of out a little further ahead of that. So you know, I'm not sure how we solve that one. It isn't absolutely necessary to have a hoist. So maybe
that issue, that could be in increments. They could use existing boat launch now and then later do the other one?
Yeah, we'll have to look at that and see if there's a way we could do that.
And then my last question, maybe I would appreciate it when you talk to RRM, when they're having discussions with the Coastal Commission, perhaps they could just slip in the word research center somewhere along there. Thanks.
Didn't they put something in that, though? Yeah, in the plan, there was a sort of an ancillary facility that could be the detail isn't good enough in there, but I think the plan the council did approve sort of had a couple other.
It could
potential.
Be a carrot, you know, something, a trade-off.
Just get a waterfront lease down at the other end and start one.
Michelle?
I don't have any questions or comments.
No questions or comments, okay. One thing comes to mind, is would there be any way or any advantage that you see, Rick, in gathering some letters of support from some of these organizations that both Ed and Lynn have mentioned? Would RRM be able to use those, or do they just go off on their own?
Well, so the mitigating any potential threat to pollute a sinking vessel and also for the future would give us a state-of-the-art environmentally sound boat repair yard to encourage people to be able to have an access to a facility rather than options where we're trying to manage activities on the water in the
future.
Like
boats are sinking.
Well, yeah, even in some repair activities on the water that have historically been done here but are being curtailed with through best management practices in the future.
Yeah. I guess my question, though, is related to whether or not the Coastal Commission will be aware of that through RRM's presentation to them, or is this supposed to be something that the Coastal Commission already knows or RRM takes for granted?
Well, we'll have to. I would load them up with the NEP. That's something I would certainly make, and get them. I think we can do that. So I guess that's the answer to your question.
Yeah. That was Michelle.
What's a ballpark figure if a boat sinks in the bay? How much money is spent?
Well, so I was thinking about the Susan Diane not too long ago, which was the old Gulf Coast shrimper that when it lost its spot prawn trawl permit in the early 2000s and they opened up the state fund. And we had a lot of time. They spent about $200,000 on the incident and getting the vessel righted and cleaned up. And then the city spent about $70,000 out of pocket when our only option was, since the owner at that point, then they walk away from the incident after spending that $200,000 with the vessel somewhat stabilized and cleaned up, and they say, okay, owner, take care of it. Well, the owner at that point had no resources, and so our only option, we felt, was to get the owner to sign the vessel, the rights of the vessel over to us, so we destroyed it. We ran up about $75,000, almost $80,000, out-of-pocket costs of our own doing that, and we've subsequently billed him and not collected any of that. And I don't know how lucky. I don't know whether Osprey's had any luck collecting their fees. I doubt it. They've no doubt tried to pursue collection too. So that was about $300,000 in out-of-pocket costs for that vessel.
And you got a couple more besides that, right?
There's a number we had recently. The rest of C-3-2 almost sank. And that was a near emergency. That was a near disaster that was averted, but it's hard to tell when the next... It's hard to tell with these vessels. We don't know. You know, we have suspicions if they're not being properly maintained, but we don't know what will happen next. And, you know, one note on
property that a lot of that humpity-bumpity sand that's down there in front of the power plant was old dredge material from dredging the bay, and that's been filled in for years. And I think the only reason they made it ESH was to give the power plant a bad time to try to slow them down. And that's pretty much, everybody knows it was political. But try to get that point across to them, I don't know if it would help or not.
Lynn?
I broached that subject with Dan Berman, who is very familiar with most of this stuff. And he said a couple of things. One, they designate most... coastal areas, if they possibly can, as ESH, not because current status of the land, but because it can all be taken back or revitalized to its previous pristine state. They don't quite tell you at what point in time that was, but that it can be renovated. Secondly, he said that the Coastal Commission really does not like to change their designation. They don't do that lightly at all. Recommendation. The other group that I'm sorry I didn't mention, I talked to the Sierra Club as well with their Environmental Protection Subcommittee, who at the end of their meeting did put it in their minutes, a resolution that they would be in support of the boatyard even if they were to use environmentally sensitive habitat land because That's of good. The necessity of it.
Yeah. I think it seems to me that testimonies from those groups would be of a lot of value because it is a local issue and there's no other real alternatives to the boatyard, to the haul out, at least in our area. And it just does seem to me that testimony from these groups would be of value to our RM as they approach the Coastal Commission with the plans. I'm not sure how best it would be to go about gathering those testimonials, but
I don't think that would be hard at all, Jim. No. I think those people would be very willing
to put something in writing.
Absolutely, on their letterhead.
Well, I think that would be a good idea to solicit that from them then.
Well, if
any other ideas? I would like to just ask, part of our packet here contained some information from RRM, apparently what they were going to be charging us for doing, and I'm not really confident myself that I understand what it is they're going to do, other than I guess what I want to ask you, Rick, is what would be the outcome of them following what they're going to do when they go see the Coastal Commission?
What they're proposing to do there for approximately $15,000 is to do data and research on the history of all the projects in the area and how the designation came about, do some additional conceptual design work to lay out the areas a little better and a little better, more detail, and then take that all that work product and have two meetings with the Coastal Commission in Santa Cruz, as one time we've discussed sort of from a professional planner standpoint with all the information that you've discussed on the history and the issues and see if some modification in their coastal's position could be had. And then they'll report back to us. And we did ask them if they could do this, complete this by April, and I think we received an affirmative. It was an 18-month process, and I think the project would qualify. So we can even start working on the financing end of that.
When they say here that they'll attempt, that RRM will attempt with the Coastal Commission to reach a test the waters to come up with an understanding, can that be interpreted to mean that once they meet with them twice, we'll have an answer, yes or no? Or would it still be a maybe? Is there any permitting that will come out of this? Any ultimate okay or nay?
No, there wouldn't be any ultimate okay until you submit the project application and then go through the full board consideration of the Coastal Commission. But the staff can give us, with this information and the kind of exchange that would happen there, the staff at Coastal Commission could certainly indicate something that they would support to the full Coastal Commission, and that's a powerful lead.
I think that Lynn's idea to include written documentation from our local environmental groups to give to RRM as part of their package.
Everything, it can't hurt.
Okay, Lynn?
In the conversation that I had with Mike Watson of the Coastal Commission, the one thing that he did say to me was that he would want to see a list of other possible areas where this boatyard could go and the reasons why we wouldn't want to put it in those other areas. We're talking here about only using that particular plan, but as I mentioned, he said, why not put it on in that parking lot on the other side of the power plant? Or I guess between the power plant and the storage yard, the Harbor Department storage yard, there's a large plot there. Doesn't belong to us, but he thought we should put it there instead. And then he said something about Tidelands Park. Now, obviously, it couldn't go at Tidelands Park. That's already a developed area now. But he was looking and thinking about any other possible areas. And I think if you're going to have RR&M do this, they probably should.
This facility plan, the first job they did was look at, is there any, where's the best site to put this kind of facility? And they evaluated them all, and Tidelands Park is fully developed at this point. The Front Street lot of the cities is a potential, but it's not as good, in the opinion of that committee, as the site to the north. And, of course, anything on the power plant would, we don't own it. So, and at that time, it was not sure what was going to happen with the power plant. If something would, I don't even want to talk about that, I guess, because we don't own it, is all I can say. This was the committee at that time decided that this was the best site for it, and so that's why we presented it this way.
So maybe a summary of that should
we will give that to
into
them.
The report too. Yeah.
No.
That's all I was going to say is that's already available, right? All the sites that have already been looked at.
One quick question. On this current plan, how large is that area for the haul-out yard, the repair facility? Do you know? The blue one?
Yeah. No, I'd be guessing.
Okay.
On this work, it was just real conceptual, that plan, to show a general area.
But that's not the actual boundary of the plot of land that the city owns, or the two that the city owns, with the one in the middle, the white one, which still is owned by Duke.
Yes, yeah, exactly right.
Any chance of them giving us that?
Yeah,
of course, it's owned, portions of that owned by Morrow Bay Power Plant, and I think there are some discussions ongoing and things like this. It probably has not a lot of value to the Morrow Bay Power Plant, but whether those can be concluded or not, I can't tell you at this point. I don't know.
Would what we get back from RRM include I think you mentioned more detailed drawings of what the would be in the dry storage and what would be in the boatyard. But would it include also some estimate of the cost of paving the road back there and those sorts of things?
No, I think I didn't ask them for cost estimates at this point. I have actually briefly discussed that with the city engineer, and it wasn't terribly expensive. It is a component that's going to cost some money, that would probably just be something we could get that number for that road out of the city engineer.
All right. Any other questions or comments regarding the boatyard? Any other comments from the audience out there? Well, we can move on then to the next item on the agenda, the Harbor Status Report.
Okay. Thank you once again, Mr. Chairman. The Ad Hoc Liveaboard Subcommittee was the first item on the agenda, and I think maybe the chairman of that committee was going to make a quick report.
The subcommittee has met twice. We had a very good turnout. The members all turned up at least one of the two meetings. We also have two non-members who have been participating, which still makes it not such an unwieldy group that we can have a very, very lively discussion. At the moment, we're mostly in a state of gathering information and trying to understand what the ordinance entails and want to make recommendations on changing the ordinance, but to actually enforce what is already on the books has been the main thing that we've talked about, and how the Harbor Patrol could actually do that more effectively, and what help or what policies we could implement to make it easier for them to enforce the ordinance. Our next meeting will be
November 17th.
November 17th at 5 to 7 at the community center, and we do welcome the public to show up and give comments.
Bill, do you have anything to add?
Says 4 to 6.
Thank you very much.
The time was changed.
Yeah, the time has changed slightly.
Oh, it's right there.
Mid adjustment. So that is 5 to 7 on November 17th.
5 to 7.
At the community center.
So I can pass you
the next item on your status report is the we wanted to let you know that we did complete repowering of both engines on Harbor Patrol Boat 68 with a grant from Department of Boating and Waterway. The project's very successful. The new the Congress will consider in the next in the coming months, and they are looking at when they did the initial review and assessment for this potential economic stimulus project. They did include a number of Corps of Engineers projects in nationwide. And so the mayor sent Lois Capps a letter asking her to make sure that Morro Bay Harbor dredging is included if they are reviewing and looking for infrastructure type projects that could be included in the economic stimulus. It looks like the, just to give you an update on the State Park Marina draft environmental impact report, that we received the comments and they were assimilated into the document with comments from the preparer on their comments that they were received. That makes a final impact, final environmental impact report that now is scheduled to go to the Planning Commission in January. And after Planning Commission review and action, I think it has to go to City Council, and that'll probably follow fairly shortly thereafter. The give you a report here on our modular office project. We're having bids packages prepared. Estimate, I think that's due in by mid-November. Once we have that number, we'll be able to finalize the budget, and we'll go to City Council at their meeting in December. I think it's December 8th. Tentatively, that date is we're on their agenda to ask for some additional funding that will be required to complete the project and then authorize the release of the bids. So we hope this project's moving forward. Seems like it's all going well. We've also got to complete an arrangement with the Morro Bay Power Plant to use some of their facilities in the interim so that we have some temporary facilities in the area. And it looks like we've got some oral agreement and we just need to work out the paperwork there. They've been very accommodating. We appreciate that very much. We'll keep you posted on that. The Nina, is that Marina Square? Did it arrive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's here. And it's going to stay here until the 16th, is my understanding, down at Marina Square again. The Lighted Boat Parade is coming up on December 6th. And I guess for future agenda items, we'll give an informational update on the news rack ordinance, and we're obviously hearing the qualifications issues again.
It'll be the last two for the season. There's one on November 11th and one on November 26th, I think, the day before Thanksgiving. And if anybody happened to have already called the number and left a message, please call again because there were some phone problems. And it's the number for that is 771-9873. And kids go fishing for free.
How old do you have to be to do?
Well,
you don't qualify.
Just call. Sorry. It's negotiable.
You don't qualify, Gene.
Yeah, he does.
Thanks, Michelle. That's a nice program.
He certainly does.
Emotional.
Any other comments, members
he's
of the board? Any comments from the audience? All right. Do we have a motion to adjourn? Second?
I'll second that right now.
All those in favor? We are adjourned.
Glenn Albright is a good mechanic.
Right, but he's so busy you can't get to him.
He's working on my boat today for 2 days in a row.
I need an alignment.
Well, so does another person down there that lives on a boat in front of the Otter Rock. Engine alignment. Says he's got some vibrations in his soul.
I got some vibrations.
So he'll be more available probably tomorrow because I'm going fishing. So he's more.
No, he told me not to call him back for 2 weeks.
Well, he's busy. He's a busy
man. Well, I know, but there ought to be somebody.
Glenn's, even when Nick Howell was alive and I was good friends with him.
Glenn's number out 6 or 7 times in the last 2 months. People broke down on the dock.
People are busy.
He is there.
He's a good man.
Well, then why won't he come to help me?
He told you he's busy. At least he told you the truth.
He did.
If he had time, he said I'd be down or he'd be down. That's the way it is. You got to wait.